Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Taiwan has begun its longest ever live fire military drills and evacuation drills in major cities. Ukraine again increased its attacks on military sites deep into Russian territory. At a 2-day summit in Brazil, leaders of BRICS expressed concern about the tariff policies of Trump. Vietnam got a reduced tariff from Trump after allowing the development of his golf course, purchasing Boeing jets, and increased imports of liquid natural gas. NHK Japan.
Taiwan has launched its longest ever live fire military drills with a focus on countering Beijing's stepped up military pressure around the strait. More than 20,000 reservists will be mobilized in the 10-day exercises that began Wednesday. The training period is double the length of past years. The drills will include becoming familiar with U.S.-supplied HIMARS rocket systems that Ukrainian forces have been using against Russian troops. They will focus on how to counter China's so-called gray zone tactics. The term refers to Beijing's coercive actions that fall short of an armed attack. In Taipei and 2 other cities, citizens will take part in evacuation drills based on a scenario that infrastructure are coming under attack. The extended drills are seen as an attempt by the administration of Lai Ching-te to strengthen the defense capabilities through cooperation between the military and civilian sector. Defense officials in Beijing have criticized the move. They issued a statement saying no matter what weapons they practice with, China's countermeasures against Taiwan independence will not be deterred.
Ukraine appears to be stepping up attacks on Russia. Kyiv says it has struck more targets inside the country, including strikes far from the front lines. The Ukrainian military says it hit a military industrial complex in central Russia on Saturday night. It says facilities there produce antenna used in suicide drones and missiles. The attacks come after Kyiv's spiderweb drone assault on military airfields last month. A U.S. think tank, the Institute for the Study of War, said on Saturday that Ukraine continues to show it can conduct long-range strikes on Russia's defense industrial base.
Leaders of the BRICS emerging economies have expressed concern about the tariff policies of U.S. President Trump, calling them a threat to global trade. A 2-day summit is being held in Rio de Janeiro, the first since the group announced it would admit 6 new member states. But the leaders of both China and Russia aren't there. Chinese leader Xi Jinping skipped the summit and sent a deputy. Russian President Vladimir Putin attended online.
With multilateralism under attack, our autonomy is once again at stake. Hard-won achievements such as climate and trade regimes are under threat.
The Brazilian government released a declaration following some discussions. It said, "The proliferation of trade-restrictive actions threatens to further reduce global trade." The statement does not mention the U.S. or its president by name, but it is clearly directed at the Trump administration. Trump shot back at the bloc on Sunday. On social media, he stated, "Any country aligning themselves with the anti-American policies of BRICS will be charged an additional 10% tariff." He said there would be no exceptions. The BRICS declaration also denounces the military attacks against Iran, a member of the bloc. It says the attacks violate international law and the Charter of the United Nations. BRICS started with just five countries: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. China and Russia have leaned on the group to function as the Global South's counterweight to the G7. According to the Brazilian government, the group represents over 40% of the world's total population and around 40% of the global economy measured by purchasing power parity, making it larger than the Group of Seven. Russian President Vladimir Putin has highlighted the group's efforts to shift away from the U.S. dollar. 65% of BRICS trade was done using members' local currencies. Vietnam last week became the second country after Britain to finalize a trade deal with the U.S. Trump announced that Vietnamese goods will only face a 20% levy, much lower than the 46% the country faced in April. Neither side has disclosed details of the agreement. Vietnam took steps to dodge the steep tariff hikes. In May, the country's Prime Minister Pham Minh Chinh attended the groundbreaking ceremony for a luxury golf resort near the capital Hanoi with Trump's son Eric. The Prime Minister has urged local authorities to provide maximum support for the project. In addition, a Vietnamese airline company has decided to go ahead with a major purchase of Boeing aircraft, while the country announced it will increase imports of liquefied natural gas.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your local time zone. Next, France 24. A business report on the latest Trump tariffs, especially a 50% levy on Brazil, which actually has a trade surplus with the U.S. Human-caused climate change made Europe up to 4 degrees Celsius hotter last week, which researchers say resulted in an additional 2,500 deaths from the week-long heat wave. France 24.
Well, it's time for business now with Charles Pellegrin. Charles, there's a fresh batch of Trump tariffs coming out of the oven, and Brazil is targeted in particular.
The U.S. president announced so-called reciprocal tariffs targeting 8 new countries on Wednesday. Those are meant to take effect on August 1st, a deadline that Trump says is firm, with no exceptions granted. Of those 8 countries, which includes the Philippines, Iraq, Algeria, and Moldova, Brazil is definitely the most important trade partner for the United States, ranking in the top 20 U.S. trade relationships. They'd previously faced the threat of a 10% tariff and are now faced with a whopping 50% rate. That's how much goods from Brazil will be taxed upon entry to the U.S. This could seem like a surprising turn of events, considering that the United States actually runs a trade surplus with Brazil, not a deficit, which is something that Trump has been particularly focused on correcting with his tariffs. Last year, Brazil actually imported more goods from the U.S. than the U.S. imported from Brazil by just under $2 billion. So it's a fairly balanced relationship.
So what's the problem then? Why is Trump imposing such hefty tariffs on Brazil?
Well, there's a whole host of reasons which prove that Donald Trump is using the U.S.'s trading power as a cudgel to extract concessions in many different areas, and some of them political. In the letter he sent to Brasilia, the U.S. president brought attention to the treatment of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, someone ideologically close to him, and sometimes called the Trump of the tropics. Bolsonaro currently accused of trying to orchestrate a coup, and Trump saying that trial should not be taking place, saying it is a witch hunt that should end immediately. And there are other reasons, too. Trump has also objected to BRICS, the BRICS Emerging Nations Alliance, of which Brazil is a founding member, which he sees as a threat to the U.S.'s dollar's supremacy. And he's also ordered his trade representative to launch a probe on Brazil over its, quote, continued attacks on the digital trade activities of American companies, a reference to the country's laws, which laws that are holding U.S. tech platforms responsible for the content that they host, which has led to a temporary ban of Elon Musk's X social media platform in the past.
So what would such a tariff mean if it goes into effect?
Well, for Brazil, it could be extremely damaging. Some analysts even saying it would render exports to the U.S. unfeasible. Whether it's aerospace manufacturing or industrial machinery, they're a large part of that export sector and could be badly affected. A Brazilian aerospace giant, for instance, Embraer, saw its shares dropping over 4% at the close on Wall Street as a result. And the country's currency, the real, also plunging against the dollar. But it could be bad news for the U.S. as well, which relies on Brazil for a number of key goods, especially agricultural ones. The U.S. cattle herd is the smallest it's been since the 1950s, and Brazil's meat packers have helped fill that gap. And coffee is an especially important agricultural export, which can't be grown in the U.S. $2 billion worth of the bean was imported from Brazil last year.
Human-caused climate change made the recent European heat wave up to 4 degrees hotter in many cities, resulting in a tripling of the overall death toll. That's according to a study by over a dozen researchers from five European institutions. The research comes as the EU's climate monitor, Copernicus, said last month was the hottest June on record in Western Europe. With the details, here's Siobhan Silk.
A few degrees can be the difference between life and death. That's the warning from the authors of a pan-European study that found the recent European heat wave killed almost 2,500 people in 12 cities. And the researchers say most of them would still be alive if climate change had not pushed temperatures to dangerous highs.
1,500 have only died because of climate change. So they would not have died if it would not have been for our burning of oil, coal and gas in the last century.
Parts of the continent passed a sweltering 40 degrees Celsius last month. A separate report by the European climate watchdog Copernicus finds it was the hottest June on record in Western Europe. The report notes human-caused climate change made the heat wave up to 4 degrees hotter in cities, which have lower tree cover and paved surfaces that store and release heat. The extreme temperatures were not limited to land.
We also saw a marine heat wave in this western part of the Mediterranean basin, and this kind of also reinforced, especially things like nighttime temperatures then not being able to cool down, and so which led to a lot of what we call tropical nights.
Those tropical conditions meant no respite from hot temperatures overnight, one of the main factors in heat deaths. As global warming continues unabated, Copernicus warns heat waves will become more frequent and intense and will hit more people across Europe. It's 10 years since the Paris Climate Accords were signed with the goal of limiting long-term global warming to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. Scientists say drastic action is required to keep that threshold in sight.
Those reports were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is promoting his vision for Gaza, which involves relocating all civilians out of the territory. This could be considered a crime against humanity and a war crime. The defense minister has proposed a so-called humanitarian city in Rafah, where all Gazans would be placed with no exit. Several experts discussed the prospects, including René Wildinger, a former policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has again promoted his controversial vision for Gaza, saying that the population could, as he says, voluntarily relocate out of the territory. Palestinians and human rights groups fear that plan could amount to forced displacement. Rights groups are meanwhile raising concerns about another relocation plan that Israeli media says has been outlined by the country's defense minister.
This is Rafah, tents among rubble. the site that Israel's defense minister proposed to place a so-called humanitarian city. It would initially house 600,000 people, then over time, all of Gaza's 2 million residents. They would be searched on their way in and not allowed back out afterwards. Gaza was already one of the most densely populated areas in the world. Since the beginning of the war, Israel has pushed Gazans into less and less space. First came so-called buffer zones, occupied by the military supposedly to keep Israel safe from militant attacks. Israel took control of the Philadelphia corridor in the south, along the border with Egypt, and then occupied two more corridors, the Morag and Netzarim, cutting Gaza into pieces. Gazans were later told to leave the striped areas marked here, leaving only a small portion of the strip to actually live in. The so-called humanitarian city would be located between the Morag and Philadelphia corridors near the border with Egypt. Human rights advocates have pushed back, saying the plan is a step towards forcing Palestinians out of Gaza, or what the Israeli government has called voluntary migration. No country has publicly said it would be willing to take in Palestinians.
The countries in the region would be under tremendous political pressure not to accept Palestinian refugees from their own domestic populations, who would see it as surrendering to Israeli and American wishes.
But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has leverage in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has also spoken of rebuilding Gaza without Palestinians.
We are joined by René Wildengel. He is a Middle East expert and a historian based here in Berlin. You know, Israeli officials, for their part, they say that the aim of this plan that we've heard about, reportedly presented by the defense minister, is to separate the civilian population from Hamas. What do you make of the logic behind the plan?
I don't think that this is the main goal of this plan. As we've heard in your reports, the Israeli government and Israeli defense minister Israel Katz has described the so-called humanitarian city very differently. We're basically talking about an internment camp in Rafah, because people under this plan would not be allowed to leave the city of Rafah, which is not a city anymore, which is basically lying in ruins. And then we have this other intention to drive people out. And this is something that has been reiterated by Netanyahu, by President Trump with his Riviera remarks. And this is why everybody, including me, is so worried and describing it as a potential war crime or crimes against humanity. It's very, very serious and very worrying.
Do you see any chance that it might become a reality, though?
Well, if you would have asked me that question 2 years ago, I might have said no, but unfortunately, in this 20 months of conflict in Gaza, we have seen every red line of international law being crossed. We have seen aid workers bombarded. We have seen refugee camps bombarded. We have seen the complete civilian infrastructure in Gaza destroyed. It is really a very dire situation. Basically, every medic, every humanitarian coming out there right now says that he has not seen anything like it in any other conflict site in the world. So unfortunately, it's not impossible to imagine the worst anymore. And yes, it is a real scenario. And this is why I miss at the moment a clear statement by the EU. Because if you see Netanyahu and Trump discussing this in the White House right now, I think we urgently need an alternative to this. We need an alternative that is based on international law and that puts a red line exactly here. Otherwise, yes, unfortunately, I cannot exclude the possibility that this is going to happen. And then there's another key point, which is the humanitarian access. Again, this is now by the Israeli side painted as a demand by Hamas, humanitarian access. No, humanitarian access is not an Hamas demand. It's a requirement by international law. Unfortunately, what we have seen is the creation of this Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which has created four hubs in the whole Gaza Strip for 2 million people to deliver aid. We've seen killings. Over 400 people have been killed. We've seen a large amount of people being injured. This is a total catastrophe. Humanitarian aid is instrumentalized. And it's a requirement that we need to see the United Nations deliver this aid. They had 400 places within the Gaza Strip to deliver humanitarian aid. Now, this is not a Hamas demand. The international community needs to step up. This is an absolute necessity, absolute requirement. But unfortunately, it's on the negotiating table. This should not be on the negotiating table. This should be a requirement.
How much does peace in Gaza hinge now on the involvement and the commitment of the United States? How do you see that relationship influencing the conditions on the ground?
Well, unfortunately, very much, because as we see, it's another deal that President Trump is trying to make. And there seems to be nobody that comes in at this point with an alternative to this kind of deal. And this is why we're not in the realm of international law anymore, but it basically depends on the negotiating team. And we have heard the plans of the Israeli government when it comes to this humanitarian city, when it comes to expulsion of Palestinians. And this is apparently something that the U.S. is prepared to go along with. Again, we know what Trump said about Gaza, the Riviera remarks, etc. So again, I would like to see the European Union and other major nations to come in here so we don't depend on Trump's and Witkoff's very personal opinions here, but we come back to a permanent and lasting solution.
Middle East expert Renee Wildengel, thank you so much.
Those interviews and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. As well as most podcast sites, just look for DW. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program like a generous listener in Portland, Oregon did this week, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show in the airwaves. Please, help if you can. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please help support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. In the UK, belonging to or supporting a group called Palestine Action has become a terror crime. 29 civilians were arrested last weekend for holding signs supporting the group. The death toll of Palestinians waiting to get food from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has risen to 700. At the BRICS summit, an alternative international payment system is moving forward. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The head of London's Metropolitan Police Force has been heavily criticized for defending the arrest of an 83-year-old retired priest who expressed support for the pro-Palestinian campaign group Palestine Action, and expressed opposition to the Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza. Protesters over the weekend gathered at Parliament Square, defying a warning from the Metropolitan Police, who said expressing support for the group is a crime and a criminal offense. The Met later confirmed that its forces had arrested 29 protesters on suspicion of terror offenses, could be punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Police also arrested an 80-year-old priest, Sue Parfit, who was holding a placard, a cardboard sign that said, "I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action." The arrest sparked widespread outrage among the British public and on social media, but the proactive remarks by Met Chief Commissioner Mark Rowley have now added fuel to the fire. In an interview with state-run British media BBC, he defended the arrest and said that police treated all people equally. If you're 18 or 80, you've committed a crime, and you'll be arrested. More than 700 Palestinians have been killed trying to get food in the Gaza Strip over the past several weeks, according to a new figure from the Gaza Health Ministry, spurring renewed condemnation of a contentious U.S. and Israeli-backed aid scheme. The Health Ministry in Gaza said over the weekend that at least 743 Palestinians were killed, more than 4,800 others were injured while seeking assistance at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation distribution sites. The foundation, which began operating in the Palestinian enclave of Gaza in May has drawn heavy, widespread criticism amid multiple reports that its contractors, as well as Israeli forces, opened fire on people who are just seeking food. The tragedy is that this is again a conservative reading of casualties who were at the distribution points, waiting for food parcels. Earlier last week, a report from the Associated Press News Agency quoted American contractors, mercenaries, who said that live ammunition and stun guns have been used, fired at Palestinian civilians seeking aid at the distribution points. One of the proposals discussed during the BRICS summit in October last year in 2024 in Kazan, Russia, was the possibility of creating a new alternative payment system to SWIFT, currently the main interbank payment network. This interest was mostly debated at the most recent 17th BRICS summit in Rio de Janeiro, held on July the 5th and 6th, Sunday and Monday. During the 17th annual BRICS meeting, the leaders proposed moving forward with the creation of such a system within the framework of the BRICS Cross-Border Payments Initiative, which aims to facilitate more accessible, faster, and secure transactions between member countries. According to the summit's final declaration, the group welcomed the technical report prepared by the BRICS Payments Working Group, which outlined possible strategies to ensure greater interoperability between national financial systems. SWIFT, which is the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, is a network that connects more than 11,000 financial institutions in over 200 countries. It's controlled by major Western powers, the United States in particular, which use it as a political tool to impose unilateral economic sanctions. This has been particularly exploited by the United States and its allies to impose economic sanctions on several countries or exclude their companies from this network, preventing them from paying such payments on SWIFT, as is the case of Russia, a recurring victim of the United States and European sanctions. Faced with this reality, the bloc seeks to reduce its dependence on the U.S. dollar in international trade and finance, so a new alternative payment system separate from SWIFT would focus especially on redoing the dollarization of member countries. In summary, the possible new alternative system pursues the following objectives: facilitate more accessible, faster, and secure transactions, reduce dependence on platforms controlled by the North, strengthen trade and investment among countries of the Global South, and protect the bloc's countries from unilateral sanctions.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.